Good morning and welcome. We will open the meeting with the reading of the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among Theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among Theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as Theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves, by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true Theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. In order to carry out the policy of this lodge, this Philadelphia Lodge has a variety of activities scheduled on a monthly and weekly basis. Now, each Wednesday from 7:45 to 9 o'clock, there is a study class in the Ocean of Theosophy. The class has been studying the chapter 14, which relates to cycles. Now, it is taught that this study is one of the most important of the entire theosophical system, and yet it is the least known. Now, this coming Wednesday, the class will take up this subject from the viewpoint of the earth, ages, and cataclysms. And next Wednesday, there will be a beginning of the new chapter 15, which relates to the differentiation of the species. Now, each Sunday morning from 11 until 12 noon, there is either a talk or a forum. This Sunday, there is a talk entitled The Little Universe Called Man. And next Sunday morning, we will have a forum entitled Easter, the Rebirth, the Physical and Spiritual Rebirth. Now, these meetings is followed by a time for questions and discussion. And the month of March, general theme is spiritual knowledge. Now, the third Friday of each month, there is a class dedicated to a comparative study of religion and philosophies. Now, this month, March, which has passed, now was on the 15th, the class studied Taoism, The Quiet Way. And for the 20th of May, the class will discuss Fusionism, the Path of Balance. Now, this lodge maintains a reference library, which is open each Wednesday from 5:30 until 7:30. It carries a straight line of theosophical literature, comprising the original writings of the founders of the Theosophical movement. This literature may be read in the library along with other texts that may be of interest to you. And to acquire further information about them, we suggest you contact the student librarian. Just outside this meeting room, you will find all of this literature on display for sale. It may be purchased either during the library hours or before or after our regular meetings. All activities of this lodge are free. The lodge continues to be made to be sustained by voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. And all are most welcome to participate. The reading today selected in line with the talk is taken from Universal Theosophy by Robert Crosby. Man occupies the most important place in the whole scheme of evolution. He stands where spirit and matter meet. He is the link between the higher beings and those below. He has so to act, so to think and act, in and upon, and with the physical matter that he raises it all up and gives it another tendency, another trend. By the very constitution of his nature, by reason of his being connected as he is in the physical body with all nature, the secret doctrine states that man can become greater than any one of the Dian Chohans and equal to all of them put together. That is the goal which lies before him, the goal of the kingly mystery, the seeing and knowing and feeling and acting universally. For there is a power in man which enables him to judge aright. He has the all-seeing eye, the all-encompassing sight which permits him to see the justice of all things. And always there is present the power of choice in one direction or the other. The questions before each human being are, whom will ye serve? Will you serve the highest spiritual nature or the body of flesh? Whom choose ye this day? The subject of the talk is the little universe called men.
Thank you. We think in a nutshell, that's primarily the idea that we wanted to express today. And Mr. Crosby put it quite well. So we're thinking the little universe called man. Some might say that's a little overdone, don't you think? And some might say, I don't understand the connection. But if we could consider a universe, a solar system, a cell, do we not know that each one of them have a center? And have they not sprung from one single source? So today, when we talk about man and his connection with this whole great evolution, we want to bring up the idea for you to keep in mind. We have seen the word cosmos with a K and cosmos with a C. If you will keep in mind, there is a definite difference. K-O-S-M-O-S represents the universe. C-O-S-M-O-S is the world and the solar system. So if we keep that in mind, as we go through this discussion, it'll help us understand that there is a difference. There is a difference in degree. Now, the solar system is as much the microcosm of the one macrocosm as the man is the former when compared with his own little solar cosmos, small c. Now, this one we're going to have to really go slowly with because you need to think about it as you go through it. This is a quote from The Secret Doctrine. The universe is the macrocosm, man the microcosm, man the spirit is the macrocosm, man the thinker is the microcosm, and that thinker in turn becomes the macrocosm to the material form in and through which we operate, and also to the lower three kingdoms that come below us. So it is a whole development in evolution, and we've probably never thought about our interconnection with all of nature. So to nature, we can say we are the macrocosm because it's the way we think and act that affects the evolution of those three lower kingdoms, that of the animal, the vegetable, and the mineral. There is a regular circulation of vital fluid throughout the system, of which the sun is the heart. The same is the circulation of blood in the human heart. We are both made up of electric and magnetic currents. We're electric and magnetic. The solar system is likened to a human body. So this is what we're going to try to bring out, and we have a lot of information that might come out in the questions and comments later. So for this whole great vast period of evolution, if we look at the idea that was mentioned about cycles and the importance of it, what is man's cycle? It is a return of impressions. Impressions one has either evolved with, or impressions of things that one doesn't understand, but it'll take time for us to understand that there's more to us than we see through this physical form. And it states in the philosophy, it tells us, it's not until the invisible man, that is the real man, enters the physical instrument, could there be any humanity at all. So on that step, it brings us to this invisible being, this part of our nature, our individuality, that I am I that we all know. It's, in a way, it's for us to understand that there's a part of our nature that is never for an instant without consciousness. Whether we go through a waking state, a sleeping state, dreaming state, there is always consciousness at work. Life, in a way, is consciousness. So where do we look? How do we start to understand this? The ancient teachings tells us to begin to study oneself as a universal being. One will see that one's principles of one's nature is a universal principle and cannot be thought of anything in time and space. There is that part that just is. For universal man, we have our higher principles, one's higher principles. They are unlimited. To be able to think of oneself in every walk of life as a universal being, as an aspect of the one deity, the one source of all. We study, during the course of study, we keep at hand always those three basic fundamental principles that underlie all of life. We can use it as a ruler to sort of understand ourselves and our situations and all around us. It's something when we start to think about it, we can see that, yes, there is part of my nature that is more like an observer of actions and ways of thinking that this, quote, everyday man is in the use of. So, again, we have to look to the universe. Now, we know that sunlight exists in an unbroken continuity. Now, whether we can see through the clouds or not, that sun's always there. Well, so too with man's principle, that one real principle. His principles exist, it says, in an unbroken continuity, all through focused at any time at a given point or a center within the universe. Through man is embodied. And though man is embodied in matter, he's not encased in a body. The universe as a whole has its circulation system. It has its arteries, its veins, its capillaries. And it's interesting that, too, with the universe, we speak about man's principles sevenfold. Well, the universe is also sevenfold. So we get back to comparing the two. When we look to the sun, that's the great heart for the solar world. Just as our heart, with its pumping and its workings, is that which gives life to this physical form. And it states that all lives, or atoms if we wish to call them, they meet in the sun in their seventh aspect every 11 years. That cycle, we know it's always there. Man's circulatory system, that going up from the astral and the physical bodies, define periods of time marking their gyrations. So too, in the universe, we can also hit by the gyrations and the understanding of vibrations. They're all in tuned. So, for any one of us to entertain a single thought or feeling, or to initiate any type of act that is not felt by all nature, both above us and below us. And here's the connection with the cycles and going from the macrocosm into the lower kingdoms of the microcosms. The karma of the animal world is seen to be, in its final analyst, man's karma. For the ancient teachings explain that the animals are man's cast-off clothing from past evolution, from past periods of evolution and time. In all evolution, man occupies that central point. Man is the hub and the center of that great wheel of life. So then why should his principles not find their natural focal points, and embodiments in certain forms of animal, vegetable, and the mineral kingdom? We know from medical knowledge that the fetus goes through the lower kingdom states in its early development within the womb. There are times when one looks at pictures and they go, that looks like a tadpole. Or the idea of the veins and the growth. And again, that even in that development is a growth from within coming without. So with all the powers in the universe, to know that they are latent in us, every one is a little copy of the whole universe. It says that this idea of this one principle, this one source, the idea that beingness does not become, beingness is. If we look at that idea, that deific principle in the universe that underlies everything, that is within and without everything, we might understand that it just is. It doesn't have attributes. It doesn't have this. It doesn't have that. It just is. And there's a part within us that just is, that will go from life to life, trying to gain knowledge, trying to gain what life is all about. We know that the idea of our affinities, when we look at them, they are ourselves. We have built them up to be what they are. We can change them. We have the power to do that. And if we understand that in our evolution stands between that of the universe and all the kingdoms below man, we can see that there's a responsibility put upon us as we go through our periods of evolution. And as it's stated somewhere, it said, I was not born a loser, I was born a chooser. And we were. For most of us, we don't understand it in the highest sense. From the secret doctrine, we'd like to bring you this bit of information. The whole order of nature, evidence and progress march towards a higher life. There is design in the action of the seemingly blind forces. The whole process of evolution with its endless adaptations is a proof of this. The immutable laws that weed out the weak and feeble species to make room for the strong, and which ensures survival of the fittest. Though so cruel in their immediate action, all the workings towards a grand end. This very fact of adaptations that we see shows that there is a struggle of existence in the lower kingdoms. But each one of those lower kingdoms has their way to feed upon getting energy and force. And in times, we can express and see it if we get close enough to it. For most of us, we're probably mostly close with the animal kingdom. But yet, that of the vegetable kingdom, there's so much that has come out about it, and especially at this time of year, with everything starting to bloom, that the vegetable kingdom's consciousness that it has, that it knows that it needs sunlight, it'll tilt towards it. We know it needs water to grow, and of course, the soil within it. Now, these lower kingdoms don't have self-consciousness, but the consciousness, the intelligence within it, knows that naturally. There is no choice to be made. It follows the law of cycles. It knows when to bloom. It knows when it starts with its budding. It just follows a natural course. Now, even the mineral, that idea of cohesion, that any mineral knows to keep its form, even a grain of sand, that consciousness, that intelligence, is that idea of keeping its form. So there is no, in a way, any dead matter anywhere within the world. And it says that we should understand that. Now, we know that evolution is not a force. It's a process. It's not a cause, but it's a law. Evolution is the law. And man has the power to rule wisely or misuse his knowledge for the lower kingdoms. So we could say he is a small universe governing countless living little lives who are dependent on him for their good or ill fortune, their health or disease, because we do affect those lower kingdoms by the way we think, by the way we act. And if we think about it, look how much of those kingdoms are physically within our body, this form that we use. Every time we breathe in and breathe out, we're giving life in a way and another development, a change for that life coming in and going out. So this studying the correspondence, the direct roots between our principles and our universe can make us also more inward giving, shall we say, to know the bigness of it and yet the beauty of it. It's not such an awesome thing. And then to know again that feeling of responsibility, of duty that we have to the other kingdoms. So a major and minor are parallel keys. Both are boundless, immutable, eternal, and omnipresent. Both are what they are because of the law of cycles. The two are become to one because they cannot be different. So it's not that far-fetched. It's not that off-balance. If we look at the idea of unity and balance, and we've heard many times from this platform and from the ancient teachings, the purpose of life is to learn. And life is made up of learning. Some have the ability to go through life with very little change. Others are constantly looking for something. They don't know what it might be, but there's something within them that knows there's more to me than what I see and do every day. What it is, how to find it, we might not know, but the fact that that yearning and that searching lets us know that there's a part of our nature that knows this. We are more than what we see when we look in the mirror and the physical. And it was mentioned in the reading about the Dhyani Shohans. We also wanted to bring this up just briefly for those of you who have not heard of that expression. These could be, in a way, they're called angels or messengers, but it says, the whole cosmos, with a capital K, is guided, controlled, and animated by almost endless series of hierarchies of sentient beings, each having a mission to perform, and they are called Dhyani Shohans, and they are the agents of karmic and cosmic, with a C, laws. And for each of these beings, of these hierarchies that have gone through earlier periods of evolution, has gained knowledge and are there to help younger humanity, us, move on with it. It says they were either prepared to become a man, if not in the present, then in the past, or a coming cycle of evolution. So universal mind, the soul of the universe, they use that term, I think it's Mani Mundi, is the Sanskrit, meaning soul of the world. It means our higher egos, our essence of identity, and identity with it, which is a radiation that even unknown, universal, absolute. It is thought divine. So that brings the connection within us. We have to want to search for it and look for it and change for it. Whether we do or not, that's another question. But the idea is, what also was mentioned, that kingly mystery, the seeing and knowing and feeling and acting universally, not just for me, myself, and I, but for everything within the universe, because we are part of it. So that gives us basically some ideas between the two, and we are open for questions or comments. Yes.
Yesterday at the forum that we had, the last speaker was speaking about how a man can affect the natural world and can cause, you know, like the tsunamis and the earthquakes and all of that. And it was brought out in the talk just now too, the connection between man and the lower kingdoms, and it's just the thought that what we do can create such a immense result in the earth is just amazing.
So true, so very true. Because if we would think, one of the biggest problems is the idea of separateness. Not only you and I, my family, your family, my country, your country, my race, your race, my religion, your religion. That whole idea of separateness has been imbued for such a long time. And it does state in the philosophy, we are behind, time-wise, in our evolutionary period of where we are now. We are really evolved in that desire, personal nature, all over the world. And it's because of the way we act. It's like anything else. There's just so much that we do between mankind, that nature has to let off some of that steam. This idea that Earth is just here as our little footstool is wrong. And we're just continuing until we wake up, hopefully, and start to make some changes and understand we can't just keep taking, because there'll be nothing left for us to develop on. Yes.
But it's also, in the philosophy, it's even more important how we think and how we feel. We don't have to act or do in order to create these disasters. It's, we have these passionate thoughts and anger and negative feelings, and nature has to have an outlet for them. So it isn't just doing. It's thinking and feeling.
And it is, as was stated, it is thinking. Because thoughts are things. For some people, they don't, what do you mean thoughts? Thoughts are things. You send out a thought with enough force and energy and vitality, you will get a reaction from it. And for most that have negative thoughts and selfish thoughts, throughout the world, that explains nature letting off steam. It has to. It's part of their evolutionary process too.
This idea of earthquakes and the tsunamis, I guess in some way it could be caused by man abusing the environment through decades of time, eons of time. But also the fault lines, say in a particular mountain range, say like in California, just for an example, when the movement of tectonic plates, couldn't that also be part of natural forces, but maybe accumulated where there's a lot of negative vibrations from humanity? I mean, could it be a combination too?
That's what we're
not,
saying.
Not just negative thoughts or negative perceptions of mankind, negative actions, creating the heavy vibrations, but also maybe a part of nature too. Is it a process where there's movement of tectonic plates? It could be natural forces too, maybe not always such a negative thing.
Well, when we say the negative, we after one starts studying these ancient teachings, and just remember, Theosophy is just a very small section of the great ancient teachings that are around. One starts to understand, and we've been here for so many years as thinking human beings, we have made this beautiful earth what it is today, and we're almost in the process of tearing it apart. But yet it states in the ancient teachings, this earth, until all humanity that is going to completely take what it can from it, learn from it, will stay in existence. But we're making a lot of little holes and dents here and there. And it comes back to, as it said, not just our thinking right now. Thinkings of, if we've been thinking human beings for over 18 million years, it's taken a long time for this to happen. And the other thing is, it didn't happen overnight. It's something that's been building and building. So yes, there is a natural thing of when we see from a lot of these disasters come new lands come up, other lands go down. Anyone reading of the history of Atlantis, the sinking of Atlantis. This is a net, but it's a balance that the earth is keeping to keep us here. So if we start to think it's the way we think and live and act and interact with each other, we might understand why these things happen. And it's not that nature is getting back at us. It's trying to keep a balance within the form that we have to use. Yes.
Yeah, well, in our ongoing studies in cycles, which of course we're on in chapter 14 now, yeah, in the ocean, man is, of course, we are nature. We're all interconnected. We have the power of choice, whereas the kingdoms below us and the kingdoms above us do not. So we impel the kingdoms below us, and the kingdoms above us are there to, in a sense, keep order and keep, they're one with the law.
Yes.
Because they don't act against their own interests, because they have all the knowledge and the wisdom and the power, but they don't have the power to take free choice away from us. They can influence some of the minor currents, as is said, but after a while, all the negative thinking and all that, it comes to a point where there has to be an outlet. And so there is destruction, but out of that destruction is regeneration. So we need to look at that. What seems like the worst thing that could happen could very well be the best thing that could happen. It's a shock to our system, but we need that shock to wake up and to, you know, retool in a sense.
Yeah, and rebreathe, yes.
Also, it's important to understand that we're not judging the souls who are trapped in the current cataclysm. What we're saying is that the entire mass of humanity has generated force and thought and tension that eventually has to blow somewhere, and that thinking is permeating the astral light. It's not particular to a particular country or a particular region, but it is shared, it's collective, it's universal across time and space. It has a duration of its own. So we're not hanging the cause of the cataclysm on the folks that were actually living there. They may be there for a variety of karmic reasons that we don't see or can't comprehend.
Yes, because we were just thinking in connection with part of yesterday's discussions they had too. When we have disasters like what happened in New Orleans, that's one thing. Now let's take the same disaster that's happened in Japan. Does anybody notice any difference? The people of Japan are brought up on a different way than we were brought up here in the West. There is no vandalism. There is no looting. There are people getting as much as they can their life together so they can go out and help the one next door. It's a different type of action because their beliefs in life and the way they live are different. Most of them in Japan are Buddhist. Whereas here, that's an example of what we're speaking about, the differences. And yet all through the world, countries who'd never had snow have had snow. All the weather seems to be jumbled up, topsy-turvy, where it's used to be hot and hot and always hot. It's cold, it's freezing. Everything is getting mixed up. If we started to think, maybe in a way, we're the cause of all this mix-up, maybe there's something that nature's trying to bring to us to understand. Because as was stated, those lower kingdoms and those higher kingdoms don't have that power of choice. They work under that force and vital energy of cycles. Yes.
May I speak for the people of New Orleans, though? In many cases, what was seen as looting was desperation to get water or any kind of food for their families. So it wasn't really criminal action. It wasn't for anybody's profit. So what we see is the result of certain lacks of intelligence and of planning, all kinds of
But
the individual people, for the most part, while not Buddhists, were not acting in a criminal way.
We didn't mean to make it as a criminal way, but we're just trying to show you the reaction of people just taking over. And a lot of that started all the way at the very top, because where they should have had help from a government, our government that we all make up, just didn't come fast enough, soon enough. Hi, yeah, on the back.
The other problem was not so much on the people that were scrambling to survive, to save their families and their neighbors. What we saw, the reaction of the folks that lived outside of New Orleans.
Coming in.
No, the people that were living outside New Orleans who were saying, don't come to my town for help.
Exactly.
Stay out. Yeah. Folks on bridges with guns saying, we're not going to help.
That's the difference here in the States versus other countries and the way they might think. Yes?
Three things. I worked in the World Trade Center at 9/11.
Wow.
And several of the partners of the firm I was working with passed away. And there was a lot of chaos right after the buildings crashed. However, afterwards there was a unity in New York that was beautiful. I was then hired to write the strategic assessment to rebuild New Orleans. So I was there right afterwards. And yes, there was a lot of chaos in the beginning. But the beautiful thing about Katrina was that there was an instance where everyone had lost everything, and that despite the racism and despite everything, everybody was in the same boat and they were working together for quite some time. Mm-hmm. That lesson, very few people were able to afford to continue that lesson. Mm. But it did permeate. My mother was born in Japan. And so I have a lot of relatives in Japan. And so post that, you are right that they are trying to help each other, but they are trying to hide the devastation that is happening. They don't want it to be known. Mm. They are embarrassed of a natural disaster. So there's different responses to what happens, but I do believe that it's an opportunity for all of us to grow in an understanding that in the midst of chaos, in the midst of confusion, mm. there can be clarity and there is a choice to live life on a different level. Last thing is that what happened in Katrina in America is now happening everywhere.
Right.
The financial downturn is everyone's Katrina. So those mm. who had legacy wealth are now losing it at a phenomenal rate. So America has an opportunity to be able to embrace a new way of living and a new way of considering that.
Yes, because as a country, we do come off as very arrogant. And most of us are everyday people. We're not arrogant. We're affected. And that's another thing, too. In today's world, let's go back 100 years, what the situation going on now would have been affecting people. Not like it is today when you have all these communications that you can pick up and know immediately what's going on anywhere in the world, that eventually there will be a period where the world will come together again, because this whole basic thing of evolution, we've gone through, shall we say, the golden age, the silver age, the bronze age. We are now in the iron age. It's called the Kali Yuga. It is the densest, we could say the densest, the darkest of all those ages versus when we go back to the golden age, where there was a time when humanity lived in harmony with everything and everyone. We will eventually, with these cycles, work out of the Kali Yuga and work our way back up again. The one thing going for the Kali Yuga, it's a fast-moving cycle. More could be done to help humanity, help within the world together as a unity, as a brotherhood, at this period of evolution, in this one, to work up to a better. And it's just like at night when we go to sleep at night, we have steps till we get to the dreaming state. And the higher states beyond dreaming, the dreamless state. Coming back, we have to go through the same states that we took going out. So we're working our way up, hopefully. What are we? We're in the fifth root race. We're the fourth round, fifth sub-race of the fifth race.
Right.
And when we say race, we mean all of us, all humanity. Not basically an understanding of one's thinking or skin color. It's all humanity race, the Aryan race. It states that more can be done now if we can wake up to understand we're here to learn, we're here to be a help to each other, we're here to understand what brotherhood really means, unity.
So how do we make these teachings practical in the sense that we come here and we question a lot of things, and we use the Socratic method, and we try to bring out that which is within us, which has been buried by separateness and materialism and fear and anger and all that, put that aside, and try to realize that we are divine in nature and that we have unlimited potential for good. But it's one thing to study it, and that's a good thing, to come and study and question. But how do we really make it practical when we go out into the world? Is there a specific guideline or a plan?
Well, in a way there is. It says this philosophy of theosophy is a practical philosophy. It tells you, take it out, test it, check it. on your own. For the moment you leave these rooms, the basic thing is, first of all, studying ourselves. Who and what am I? What am I working on? What part of my nature? When we find out we're sevenfold nature, and it's a very confusing development that we're having to work on. And the fact that we have a personality that we all think we look in the mirror, we think we are what we see in the mirror. And yet there's a part of us that knows there's something else. There's a part that even as a young child, we knew this was just and this wasn't fair. This is not right. There's that. We have to search first. And the other thing is, you can actually take this out and test it and check it. When you look at the three basic fundamental ideas, that idea that we're all from one source, we're all essence of that one, that we live in a world and a law of cycles, not ups and downs, mistakes and accident things. It is a law of cycles. There are vast cycles. Within those vast cycles are small cycles. We know we have our own cycles within us. And that the idea there's a purpose for life is to build up all of life. So with those three ideas, once we start to study them and understand them, we can try to do this on an everyday basis, not just to our closest friend, not just to our family, not just to the people on our block. But this is why we say with the communication the way it is today, you can be watching stuff and, you know, tears can be running down your eyes out of for nothing, but it's what we're seeing is going on around us, other humanity. And it's like we know, we feel that pain. A mother has a pain here in the States is the same type of feeling that a mother who lives in a far-off country on a small island, she knows that pain. So it's a universal thing. We just have to start thinking more on a grander scale. And the other thing is, for as many times as we fall and slip inside, hey, as long as we can get up and brush it off and keep trying, that's all we need to know, because eventually it's like building a habit, getting rid of a habit. We wonder, why does it take so long? Think how long it took till it becomes a habit. You can make it automatic for yourself, but you gotta wanna have to keep working on it. Way in the back.
Look, just to go back for a minute to the ages, the ages are cycles that are going to happen. And the golden age was our age of innocence. We didn't kill it. We had to grow up out of it and begin to have our own experience. The problem is, we kind of never got past the teenage years.
Yes.
You said, you know, we are behind. We have not become adults. Yes. But if we apply the philosophy, we can, in some parts of our life, be in a golden age. Even if we're working here and helping here, we're living and being in a higher state because we love life and we love humanity.
And it, whether one realizes it or not, if you try it enough times, we've all had that feeling of euphoria, whether it was something we could see or something, I know I didn't say it right, whether it's something we can hear, something that we can see, there's a feeling that just builds up. There's like a sunset. Nothing could be more beautiful if you saw that sunset somewhere at some time, of hearing some strains of music, of someone reading some sort of poetry. There's a part of us that sort of like wants to bloom and come out of it and stand and look at it. And sometimes we have those effects coming out of a dream or after waking up, that feeling that everything is just grand. But during the course of the waking up and getting dressed and getting ready for work, we fall back into that old routine, that every day. If we could try to hold on to that feeling, or remember that feeling that we had, whether we've had that experience once or twice. It's a beautiful feeling, and it's nice just to relax. We run so fast, we don't hear ourselves at all. Yes.
But irrespective of how we might feel as individuals, would it not be a grand thing to practice the golden rule with everybody? Mm-hmm.
And that's why things like the golden rule exists. How many people really live by it or try to live by it? In the back.
Well, both the Kuan Yin pledge from China, and I know there's an ancient Jewish saying, to save one life is to save the world. Both of those two statements speak more about the collectivity, the universality of brotherhood. That it's the golden rule, and it's kind of the golden rule uplifted to the nth degree.
Those are good. Those would be good to sort of use as a mantra. Yes.
There's a wonderful Hebrew one. If not me, who?
Who?
If not now, when?
Some of us have a background that we know that, and we've heard that, and as little children we thought, what are they trying to tell us? It's funny, the elders seem to know, and we in turn are supposed to be the elders to the lower kingdoms. We can't keep faking this out, folks. We have to get to the point where we can show and know some knowledge. Yes?
Well, are there any, we've heard of the term fundamental principles of the universe. How does the Astri start us out with those few fundamental ideas so that we can see that we are the little universe?
You're talking about the fundamental propositions? Those three you were saying, you can understand and try to test them and check them for yourself. Use it as a ruler when you're coming through a situation. Is this in harmony? Is this in balance? Is this not just for me, but for everyone? Those are things that should make us feel of some sort of interest. The other thing is, true knowledge, you shouldn't have to pay monetary means. It's, shall we say, it's part of our heritage. It's something that should be free. So as one learns something, if one passes it on, if it's true knowledge, it'll have to use that, as we say, use that ruler. If it's not for everyone, if it leaves out anything, then it can't be harmony. It can't be universal. It can't be unity and balance. So we can use those as our stepping grounds. And the other thing is to have a sense of humor about yourself, because we all do stupid things. But it's like, it's no big deal, but have we learned from it? Can we try to adjust better?
Well, you said before, I was thinking of an affirmation that I often use. Like, if you're involved in making a decision that concerns not only you and the well-being for yourself or something good for yourself, but maybe somebody else. Mm. So just an affirmation, divine outworking is now taking place, and what I do for myself is for the good of all concerned. Or if it's for the good of all concerned in this situation, and let this happen, so that you don't think you're being selfish or not thinking of somebody else. But like I say, if the situation involves you and some other people, whatever is for the good of all concerned, in other words, and that way you don't have those feelings of being selfish or just thinking about yourself. What's good for that person? What's good for me? Let there be balance and harmony in this situation. It's always good to do an affirmation for myself.
Right, and it's probably easier to smile, folks, than it is to frown. So hopefully you can take that idea away with you out those doors. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wait.